good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, he need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Hey, Cudahy to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake and I'm your host, Wakunjahade. My colonized name is Robert Pilot, along with my taxpayer name, too. We got to worry about that. We're a Native radio show that speaks about Native issues. And as we all know, Native issues are human issues and Native – let me try that again. I know you were waiting for that. Native issues are human issues and human issues are Native issues.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline. You could call them at 651-304-9986. They're open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. and Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Hey, we discuss national and Twin City and all over Turtle Island Native news, and we have a couple things going on here, but also I just wanted to mention it sounds like in the beginning of the show that the portions of the show could be
pre-recorded.
Yeah.
I don't think any of today's shows are pre-recorded.
No, but it was funny that there was two messages for that. I thought I'd make it an even three. But so we're excited. You know, we're going to have Sheila Lamb on talking about eagle feathers and graduation.
Yeah, Sheila Lamb is a city council member of Cloquet.
And then, of course, we're going to have Mary Kunish on her day. She was gracious enough to stop in yesterday and help us sort things out with Wisconsin State Senator Jeff Smith. And it was really an awesome kind of a circle. We had a circle talk. And this is like the first day in 3 days. I think it might be less than 3 days that the whole Dream Team's back together. Wendy, you're back. And I think Ogama was gone a day, one of the days too. So the Dream Team's back together. So it's something to rejoice. So, excuse me, one of the things I always like to say is that we talk about Native news and Native things that are going on, Native-centric things. And we have Ogama doing the news, and why don't we get to her right now, Ogama with the news. Welcome, Ogama.
Hi, Anim Bujun, everybody. I'm Ogama Ganuakwe. I am from the Red Lake Nation, and I am here with some updates. As always, I start out with updates from Stop Line 3, DAPL, Line 5, many of the various pipelines that are going in throughout the U.S. So usually we start with events. Tomorrow in Duluth, Minnesota is going to be an event by Camp McGizzy, which is one of the major camps against the Line 3 in Minnesota, as well as Duluth Youth for Climate Justice. They are meeting at the corner of Lake Avenue and Superior Street to unite and show solidarity between the many struggles. There are a lot of struggles. I can only imagine which ones they're going to be marching about for that. But again, that's tomorrow if you're in northern Minnesota. An online event that's being hosted by Duluth for Clean Water is called Watershed to Watershed, Lessons from the Back 40 Mine Resistance. That is going to be Tuesday, May 4th at 7 p.m. Duluth for Clean Water is inviting people to a discussion with organizers resisting the Back 40 Mine, which is a sulfide ore project proposed on the west on the bank of the Menominee River. The coordinated efforts actually resulted in a denial of the project's wetland permit, so they're sharing their information about that. Big event next Wednesday, I'm sure, along with many others, as next Wednesday is the National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Relatives. In the St. Paul area in Minnesota, there's going to be an open mic and a giant art installation at the Minnesota Capitol. The art installation is going to be from Artists C3, who are funded by Reclaim the Block, and the event is sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center, Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition, and others. Please wear red and wear masks and social distance if you're showing up for that event. I'm expecting there's going to be several people are probably going to live stream what the art looks like. There is still, I believe, a call for volunteers and red jingle dress dancers. You can find more information about how to get involved with that on Native Roots Radio's page. Next Friday, is the Defund Line 3 Global Day of Action. They are targeting banks and asset managers providing critical financing to build Line 3. There are events happening all over the U.S. Next Friday and in South America. But if there's no event near you, you can organize it and put it on the map. The link for this event is posted on the Native Roots Radio page, and I will repost it again. The target banks include Chase, Citi, Bank of America, RBC, and TD Bank. And the target asset manager is BlackRock. So that is going to be a really fun event. In other news, the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission has unanimously rejected a complaint from Honor the Earth, which requested an investigation into Enbridge's increase in capacity of the running Line 3. So the Line 3 and the Stop Line 3 movement in Minnesota is largely in regard to what Enbridge is calling a replacement project on Line 3, but in fact, they are installing a much larger pipe. Honor the Earth filed a complaint with the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission last October, claiming that Enbridge had increased the capacity in several of its pipelines in Minnesota by several hundred thousand barrels. They further asserted that Enbridge had failed to disclose this information to the PUC at the time that it was deciding whether or not to approve the Line 3 replacement project. Honor the Earth then argued that Line 3's replacement project would no longer be needed because of the capacity increase. Honor the Earth also claims that Enbridge disclosed the increased capacity during the regulatory process. Had they disclosed the increased capacity during the regulatory process, then the company would not have been able to meet the requirement that is currently in court, stating that they needed to demonstrate a need for the pipeline in Minnesota. So the PUC said that they do have jurisdiction to investigate the type of issues that Honor the Earth raised, but they said they don't have the jurisdiction to do so at this time because of the already present legal challenge to their approval of Line 3 and the replacement project, which was filed by Honor the Earth and several other environmental groups and is currently in the Minnesota Court of Appeals right now. Basically, Commissioner for the PUC, Valerie Means, said that everything the appellate court can know about the case must come from the record at the time of the appeal, and that's why they decided not to rule on it. Meanwhile, Enbridge had basically sold Minnesota the bill for Line 3, saying that it was going to create lots of jobs for Minnesota workers. I know we've talked about that in the past. They said that Line 3 was going to create 8,600 jobs and 6,500 of them, or 75%, would be local jobs from Minnesota. And they ended up bringing in a whole bunch of out-of-state workers. However, Enbridge just released its Line 3 jobs report for the first quarter of 2021. And they kind of glanced over that job promise. By glanced over, I mean they ignored it completely. They released an initial report on the Line 3 jobs in the fourth quarter of 2020, and it was really criticized for failing to meet its target. Minnesotans only held about 33% of the Line 3 jobs and only worked 28% of the total hours. Well, I just looked at that report as it came out, and Enbridge did not even mention any of those numbers or that job promise. They basically reported information that was centered on local tribal employment and economic data, including how much they paid Native workers and subcontractors and the hours they worked, but they did not mention the actual figures of the number or percentage of Minnesota workers hired to meet that 6,500 job promise. And the PUC has so far done nothing to hold the company accountable for this. So that is a really, really huge bummer. The last two things I want to mention really quickly is that the funeral of Micaiah Bryant was held today. Micaiah was murdered by a Columbus, Ohio police officer earlier this month after he answered a call and found her armed with a kitchen knife, using it to fend off an attacker. So our hearts go out to the family of Micaiah Bryant and also to the mosque in Moorhead that was vandalized last Friday with a swastika and some other nasty words. There is a GoFundMe circulating about that, but as a Native person who sees story after story of our structures and our religion being disrespected, my heart really goes out to you guys in Moorhead.
Pini Gigi Ogama for all the news. You're listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and up next, Wendy,
is Sheila Lamb.
Yeah.
Cloquet City Council member.
Right on.
City Council member. Yep.
We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Thank you.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline. You can call them at 651-304-9986. They're open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. and Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and you don't need to live in the Twin Cities or Minnesota to call them.
Awesome. Hey, we reached out to Sheila Lamb. We saw some things happening on Facebook, and then we're going to bring Mary Kunish on in a minute too, but we wanted to talk to Sheila about a couple things, and one of the things, the outrageousness that's happening in her area, mm-hmm. with the graduation part, mm-hmm. and how that's working out. So welcome, Sheila. Oh, we got you on mute here somehow. We're going to unmute you. There we go. Hey, welcome, Sheila.
Been a busy couple days.
Yeah, it really has. We're all getting prepped up for MMIW Day and May 5th, and I know you're big in that. And I just wanted to touch base with you because I'm a high school teacher, and I'm going to bring Mary Kunish in too, who was a teacher also, and talk about what was going on up there. I know in the 25 years of working in St. Paul Public Schools, we have battled this battle and finally won a few years ago, but it sounds like you guys are still battling up there.
Well, actually, we have good news because we got somewhere today. But to give everyone a bit of background, I have a daughter that is a senior this year and graduating. And because of community work and a lot of obstacles she's overcome, we wanted to have a beaded cap to go with her eagle feather that she was gifted, and also a sash that would honor her as an Anishinaabe woman. And when I called the school to make sure it was okay, because I'm aware of these issues, hoping policy had changed, I was told by the head of the Indian Ed Department at the high school that my daughter could have her eagle feather, but nothing else. So I let her know I didn't find this acceptable. It's not how we celebrate culturally. We do a little more than that. Mm-hmm. And because of working with trafficked and at-risk youth and having awareness among our own Native community, I think it's really important that we celebrate and elevate our students that are getting their high school diplomas and graduating. It's really important to honor them. So knowing I had a MMIW task force meeting coming up and city council issues, I didn't have a lot of time. I reached out to Stephen Witherspoon, who was the former president of the ACLU in Duluth, and I asked for his assistance. Luckily, he already had a relationship with the Cloquet School, the Carlton County School Superintendent, but he got right on it. He spoke to the superintendent as well as the high school principal. So today I received a call from the principal and Stefan both telling me that we are going to properly honor our Native students, that these graduates can wear their beaded caps and their sashes and continue to wear their eagle feathers. There will be no more of having to have the size and such of the eagle feathers approved, because I found out that was a component in this as well.
Jeez.
The part that was so disarming to me was being told that they wanted the students to look uniform and alike. And instantly, my mind went to the boarding school era.
Right.
And I saw the colonized thinking in that, was deeply offended by it. And being pretty true to form, I reached out to Senator Kunish to find out. And she said, hey, we've been trying to get this passed. It's getting held up through the GOP Senate. And I knew that I had to take this on. Not as a city council member this time, but as a mom, as an auntie, as a grandma. And I am extremely pleased with the response that came down from the superintendent and the principal. I was sad to find out that the chair of the school board didn't even know what policies were in place. And when he finally called me today, after calling him fairly early yesterday, his message stated that he wasn't aware of these situations and needed more details to do anything. But success in that Cloquet, they stepped up and they have brought in Wendy Waha, who is and does a lot around these issues and making sure there's inclusion for Native students within the school system. And it will be put in writing that there will be a standard protocol for this, and we'll actually finally have something documented. I was hearing yesterday when I made my post from students that went back to 2006, 2003, where they were forbidden to do this. So when I was asked about going to the Indian Ed parent group, well, I kind of spoke up several years ago and it wasn't like, so I didn't receive any more invitations to that. And my line of thinking was, if they were going to correct this situation, they've had decades to do it.
Absolutely.
So the students get to wear their beadwork and their sashes and their eagle feathers with pride. And we get to now honor them fully and completely, as we should have been able to do from the start.
That's perfect. That is so great. I wanted to say when before I get State Senator Mary Kunish in, I just want to say I know how excited family is. I know how excited the students are when they're beading their caps and gowns, and it really builds community. And so I just want to say that real quick. State Senator, what do you think of this? We got the MMIW week happening this weekend. We have Sheila Lamb, and this is just great news to start the week off or end the week.
Yeah, it's well, actually, I got to start the morning with Sheila with our Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women's Task Force. And here I am ending my workday with Sheila as well. And Sheila is a true warrior for an advocate for our communities. And there's doesn't seem to be an issue that she won't address head on. But this issue around allowing students to wear the regalia is not new. You know, we've tried to pass legislation in the Minnesota legislature that would allow our students to wear, well, any student to wear some kind of regalia or representation of their unique identities. And we've never been able to pass it having a split legislature where we have one body Republican and one body Democrat. But, you know, really and truly, just as Sheila said, not allowing them to is another example of sort of forced assimilation. When we prohibit our students from expressing their Native American identities, both from the past and the present, should really give us concern as a community, as a nation, as a state. And it's just such a wonderful thing to see our students wearing those different items, their cultural regalia at commencement ceremonies, because our American Indian kids probably have some of the lowest graduation rates. And if there's one time in their life that we really want to celebrate them is when they come through all of this and actually graduate from high school. I have, nieces and nephews that when they've graduated have, you know, received a star quilt or a piece of, a ribbon shirt or something so important that you actually see them stand up a little bit straighter and they put their shoulders back a little and they just glow with pride, not only for their accomplishment, but the history that they are carrying with them of the ancestors that either didn't have this opportunity or it was not a pleasing experience because they it was a forced sort of, you know, at the boarding schools and that sort of thing. So I am really pleased that Cloquet stepped up and took care of this so that we didn't have to legislate it. It'd be great if we didn't have to legislate a lot of stuff and communities would just do the right thing right from the start. So we don't have to make laws and always be arguing for these sort of things. So very pleased with the outcome from Cloquet. And Sheila, thank you once again for being such a staunch advocate for families and those that don't have the voice or nobody has listened to. You said what, since 2006, people have been trying and no luck, 2003. So here we are.
Yeah, Pinigigi, Sheila, for stopping in and giving us that great news and really all the work that you do, Sheila. Thank you so much for stopping in and spreading this good information. Really appreciate it. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and up next, Senator, State Senator Mary Kunish. We'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are a Lusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice, and the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, Pinigigi Wendy. We have State Senator Mary Kunish on, and you were very gracious to come on yesterday, too, and help me talk to Jeff Smith, yes, I just found my notes. State Senator of Wisconsin, mm-hmm. So I just want to say Pinigigi for that. Really appreciate it, and that ended up being we put that as the best of Native Roots Radio and sent that out to Chicago and the other stations. So thank you again for stopping in, Mary.
Yeah, that was really fun to meet a fellow senator from across the border, and also to see a man advocating and fighting for justice for missing and murdered Indigenous women and a white man at that. So, yeah, I was very pleased.
Yeah, definitely. So it was great having Sheila on for a little bit, but you have a lot of history with Sheila besides of what this eagle feather and beaded caps situation that just happened. Do you want to touch a little bit on that?
Sure. So I actually have met so many incredibly wonderful people over the last 5-6 years as an elected official. And the relationships that I've been able to build throughout the state of Minnesota, especially with our Indigenous people, has been like one of the best things that has ever happened to me in my life. You know, in Minnesota, we have you know, it's Dakota and Anishinaabe homelands, but we also have this wide variety of other Native folks, such as yourself, Ho-Chunk, and Fox, and others. But you don't really get to know these other groups and learn a little bit about, you know, their struggles and their joys and their language and their cultures. And so meeting Sheila has really been a wonderful part of it. She's worked very hard on our task force as a task force member. She is an incredible advocate for those that are being sex trafficked or who are sort of saved from it and helping them rebuild their lives. And there's been a time or two that I've been able to participate participate in that as well. And it's because Sheila brings me in and educates me on the resources and the trauma. And I just really, really appreciate her and the kind of enlightenment she has provided for me in my life.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. And we can say the same about you too, right, Wendy?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, we're here with State Senator Mary Kunish of Minnesota, and we were talking a little bit with Sheila prior to her segment. And Cloquet's up north. You know where it is, Wendy?
I don't know anywhere where anything is outside my little St. Paul, Minneapolis bubble.
Well, we're trying to explain to our friends in Madison and Chicago where it is.
Well, I have to look.
Okay, you can look it up. But it's north of us, a couple hours, 2.5 hours, kind of up towards Duluth. But so, Mary, what do we got going on here? I know you're in session still. It's crazy. You've been in session for the last 10 years, it seems like, because of COVID. But what's going on with your world now that we've been talking about all these other things? And we know MMIW is coming up this Wednesday, and we're all getting ready for that.
Right. Well, all of our committees, like the committees that we sit on in the legislature, both in the House and the Senate, are completed. The leaders or the chairs of each of those committees gathered all the bills that they want to champion and hopefully pass and put them into a big omnibus bill. And then we hear that big bill on the floor for us of the Senate. So that's what we've been hearing on the floor, are these big bills and providing amendments to make it better, or in many cases to prevent something disastrous from happening. So now what will happen is those omnibus bills that passed off of the floor will go into conference committee, and that's the phase of the legislative session where members of each body and each party sit in a meeting to reconcile the differences between the versions of the omnibus bills that come from the House and the Senate, because they have to match. They have to match financially, and they have to match through policy, because the House, the Senate, and the governor all have to agree on these things or it won't pass. And so they have to align everything up and kind of fight and advocate and reconcile all of that. Of course, a lot of issues are used as pawns in the game. I'll give you this if you give me that. If you take that out, we'll do this. So that's where we are now. But only 5 members sit on each one of those conference committees. And because in the Senate, the Republicans are in the majority, out of the 5, there's maybe one Democrat on that. So, for example, in our public safety and judiciary, there are 5 white men, and they make it up. There's no diversity. There's no gender balance or anything like that. So that's not so great.
No.
But here's something that I think you, both Wendy and Robert, will love. Mm-hmm. Did you hear about the long-awaited decision from the Minnesota Supreme Court that overturned PolyMet's permit to mine in northern Minnesota?
Yes, we did.
That's
in fact,
huge.
We talked about that
we've been
during
talking
the week. Yeah.
Yeah.
As soon as
yeah.
we it was breaking news.
Ogama reported it, and we re-reported it. And yeah, so we're
now I'm going to report it. It's huge. It is such a major victory for Minnesota, for the Fond du Lac band of Lake Superior Chippewa. I mean, Friends of the Boundary Water. And those of you that are listening from Wisconsin or Illinois or wherever, please take a time, you know, plan a vacation to come up to northern Minnesota and paddle through our boundary waters.
Yes.
And realize how close we come too often to pollutants and environmental injustices because of mining and fracking and mineral extraction. So yeah, that was just such an incredible, wonderful thing to happen this week, and really proud to stand with my fellow legislators at a press conference and applaud that.
Yeah, it's amazing, too, that one of the things that we talked about with MMIW, too, up in that area, we talked a little bit about how we lost sisters on those ships. It's just it's crazy just to think about how beautiful that area is and also how bleak it can be if we aren't staying on top of things like you are with the MMIW and now the Polymet thing. Now we have to stop line three any way we can. And then we have people on our show, Mary, that are from northern Wisconsin that are fighting pipeline number five from Enbridge. And one of the things I just wanted to say, too, is that this is a foreign company. This is from a different country.
Yeah.
So let's get that out there, too.
It is. And what they do is they create these shell companies. You know, it's just a shell that they hide behind so that they don't have any of the repercussions. They don't have the responsibility if or when things go wrong. And they can kind of, you know, do that man behind the person behind the curtains, you know, right, pulling and pushing their own agenda through. And so we also have this incredible piece of legislation, and Senator Jen McEwen up in Duluth is carrying it. It's called Prove It First. And this is where the mining companies that want to do these sort of things have to prove that there has been a mine, that there has not been any environmental issues 10 years after it happens. So you have to prove that any of the damage has never happened anywhere else for 10 years after a mine is closed. And of course, there are plenty of legislators that don't like that one. You know, Northern Minnesota is struggling for jobs and the economy. And, you know, I understand that mining is their way of life. That's their culture. Right. Mm-hmm. And they're struggling to retain that culture that they've had for generations. But at the same time, we have to balance that with the environmental cautions and look for ways to rebuild that area so that everybody is successful. I mean, when I, as a state senator, my district is my domain, but I also am responsible for all Minnesotans and all of our environmental issues throughout. And I take that pretty seriously.
Well, how about some union jobs and Green New Deal jobs, Wendy?
Mm-hmm. Huh?
I mean,
let's do it.
Let's get Biden's, bill across there.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, so we got just a minute left, and we really appreciate all you do for Native people and your district and the state of Minnesota, and especially Native Roots Radio. We really appreciate you coming on. We were talking earlier to a client of ours about a symposium, and it was just like, yeah, we had one person that made every symposium, and that was State Senator Mary Kunish, and somehow we got to get some kind of robe or jacket to her, some kind of thing to signify that, Wendy.
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, you always brought in such neat people, you know. It's like, ooh, I want to be a part of that conversation. So it was to your detriment, Robert and Wendy.
Yeah, well, it was awesome. And thank you so much, you know, for stopping in. Do you have any quick thing to say for the weekend here? It's going to be 86.
It's a beautiful weekend here in Minnesota. I hope wherever you are, you get out and enjoy the sun and the fresh air. And let's think about those folks that have been less fortunate for us. And let's see what we can do to make that work for them.
Wow, what a great way to end it. What a great way to end that segment, Wendy. Mm-hmm. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and that was State Senator Mary Kunish, one of our favorite guests.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Hey, welcome back. Native Earth Radio presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
All right, we got to do that over. Ogama didn't sound, she sounded lame. No, I'm just kidding. Hey, good one. All right, Wendy, I want to, you know, introduce my awesome and beautiful wife. Wendy Pilot has been an animal advocate for many, many, many years. She is also a very cool person. She's also a part of Humane Society or Humane Policy Volunteer Leadership for the Humane Society of the United States. And she works on animal issues on the local and state level. Tell us your name, Wendy, and welcome.
Hello, everybody. Yes, my name is Hannah Jihihani, and that means cares for them. And as always, I thank Dega Curtis for that name. So,
oh.
Yeah, it was awesome that day that he gave me that name. So I really appreciate it. So I could talk about all different kinds of animals and things, pets and wild animals and
everything.
We
missed you, too.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I missed you, too.
Aww.
Yeah. And so Fridays, I usually just keep it light and just talk about fun things or interesting things that, you know, somebody might want to hear or maybe not. I don't know. But
they do.
Kind of light.
And it's nice, too, because as a Native American, you know, Wendy, why it's really important that you have this segment on our show is that they are our relatives.
Yes.
All and they fill the circle, or the circle of life that we talk about. Am I boring you?
No, not at all.
About the yawn. Can't see that.
But you know, Robert and I, we feed our squirrels, so we throw out some corn and some, you know, bird seeds and peanuts and all kinds of things. But we live very close.
They're fat
squirrels. To St. Kate's College. It's a college, and they're. Campus is just beautiful.
It's an all-woman college, too. One of the few left in the United States.
Yeah, but there's a big duck pond on the campus.
Natural.
Yeah, natural spring, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and it's really beautiful. You could just – so a lot of times I just walk over there with the dogs, and it's really just beautiful, and there's all the ducks and stuff. But the ducks have learned to fly over our house, especially during the winter when they stay here. Instead of flying south, they hang out, and they'll – come and eat the seeds in our yard. But there's been
hundreds.
Yeah, sometimes hundreds come in our backyard to eat the seeds and everything. But anyway, just recently, a couple, a male and female mallard duck, come around the same time every day. It's really I could walk almost right up to them.
Hey,
and feed them.
Do they mate for life?
They don't mate for life. They mate seasonally.
Huh.
So for the season, they're monogamous seasonal mates.
Partners.
Yeah. But if one of the mates die during the season, they'll go and find another mate. And then every season, they'll find a new someone else to hang out with.
I die before you because I don't want to have to find a new mate.
But I think that you asked me the other day how long the mallard ducks live.
As a rabbit's.
Oh, you asked about rabbits. What would you think a mallard duck?
11 years.
5 to 10 years.
Oh.
Yeah. So five years in the wild they'll live, or if you have them as a pet, they could live up to 10 years.
So ours are going to live till 7 years because we feed them and talk to them, but then they fly away because they're sick of what we're saying.
Maybe. So mallard ducks, they grow to be about 2 feet long, and they weigh about 2.5 pounds. I thought they were heavier than that. But
a lot of feathers.
A lot of feathers, right? Yeah. The female mallard has the tan colors, of course, and then the male duck is much more brightly colored. And that's just so that they could, you know, the mother takes care of the babies in the nest and she just kind of blends in. So.
Oh, is that why? I always thought because men were like brighter and more colorful personality like me.
Mm-mm.
No. Okay.
No. But the one thing that I learned today by reading this little article is that, you know, when kids learn how to, you know, say what an animal says, like, what does the duck say? They say quack.
Quack, quack.
But that's only the female mallard quacks. The male mallard doesn't quack. He makes a different type of sound. And I didn't even really know that.
What is the sound?
Well, let's see. Female mallard ducks are famous for their quack. When you grew up to learn about ducks making a sound, the quacking sound is what you learned. Female quack is to call other ducks to them, usually their baby ducklings. Where does it say about the male? The male ducks just kind of make a different type of sound. Yeah. Maybe I'll find it here where it says. The male mallard is called a drake and the female a hen. I didn't know that either.
I thought Drake was called Drake. And he's like, you know, I used to call you on my cell phone.
Oh, my gosh.
Late at night. Oh, that's a Drake song.
Ducks may waddle along slowly, but they can fly pretty fast. At top speed, they can hit, guess how many miles an hour?
40.
70.
What?
70 miles an hour.
Wow.
Yeah. Mallards can fly nearly vertical if needed. This includes taking off from the water almost in a straight up position. So if they're just like paddling along, they could just lift straight up like a helicopter and fly.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I never knew that.
Yeah. They don't need to be on land or they don't need to run to get a start.
They can't run. They waddle.
They go straight up. It is estimated that there are over 10 million mallard ducks in North America. That's a pretty lot of mallard ducks. What?
Yeah, it is. this is a good news segment.
This is fluff.
Is that a lot? Or?
This is Fluff Friday. A group of ducks that are flying is called a flock. I think I knew that. But when they are in the water in a group, like they're hanging out in the water, they're called something else. Do you want to know what they're called?
Yes.
Rose laughing at me.
Oh my God.
They're called a sword. S-O-R-D.
Oh.
They're called a sword. Yeah, so I think mallard ducks are really neat. I like the two that are coming every day to our house. They kind of show up around 4:30. It's the funniest thing.
They're here early in the morning, too, waiting
for
me to feed them. And they say a few things to me before they fly away. So I think they know me now.
And this is another thing I didn't know. Mallards are omnivores. So what that means is that they eat both plants and they eat other animals. I didn't know that. I just
fish.
Thought they ate.
I've seen them diving and swimming,
yeah.
Like deep diving these ducks to get fish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they mostly feed on the surface of the water, eating all kinds of seeds, small fish, insects, but they eat frogs. Frogs and fish eggs.
Frogs deserve it.
I didn't know that. They also enjoy eating some human food too, often eating grain from human crops.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's make them a sandwich.
They're very and you really should never feed a duck bread.
Bread, that's right.
Because bread is very bad for them. And they can't really
digest.
They don't really do well with digesting bread. I'm wondering if they would be okay with the spelt bread that we have because that's a different flour. But maybe. I don't know. I'd have to look it up. But yeah, you should feed them frozen peas. Or, you know,
Beyond Beet burger?
No. Feed them peas.
Peas?
I bought frozen peas. And I
thought those
and
were
for me. And I threw them outside and they were gone in a minute. And feed them seeds, bird seeds and corn and things like that. But, yeah. So we really like our mallard ducks.
Yeah.
And last week when I was at the pond, though, there were two teenage boys with
Jesus.
Their remote control speedboat in the pond.
And scaring ducks.
And I asked them to please leave, and they wouldn't leave. So I had to go get security. But security stopped them. Security, you know, said they shouldn't be there. So
as they should.
Really? I mean, seriously. Come on, people.
I know. That was a good fluff story until the very end when the kids were you know, yelling at the ducks and getting them all freaked out.
Yeah, but they live 5 to 10 years, so I'm happy about that.
That is cool.
Yeah.
I know, because we talked about rabbits, and I was kind of depressed to hear.
I don't remember how long they live. I'd have to look it up.
I think you said 3 to 4 years max. So
huh.
I was like, wow.
I live longer than that, but I'll have to check it out.
That might be another section idea. You could have that. Hey, I want to end with these thoughts, Pina Gigi Wendy, for all you do, and speak on Native on our relatives with hooves, wings, tails, fins.
Flippers.
Hey, if you're listening to the show, you are part of the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. We need to resist, divest, and join a group. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
Free Leonard Peltier.